The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. Just coming up to 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 18th of May 2023. And you welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. And lots coming up, including... Well, we're going to be taking a trip into the garden with Paul, answering all your gardening questions, your potting questions, whether you've got a little balcony or a pot inside the house, or you're lucky enough to have some outdoor space. Whatever your questions for Paul might be, get them into us now, because the phones light up when our guests join us, and I hate then when we can't get through all of the questions, though we do endeavour to do just that. So there's that, and so much more besides keeping you across all the big issues and stories of the day, across the region and beyond indeed. What do you think of that news of a state in America, Montana, banning TikTok? Now, this is not just off public phones or what have you. They're banning TikTok from the state. Have you on TikTok? It is the number one social media app. Everyone kind of talks about Twitter, I suppose, and Facebook. But TikTok is the biggest app in the world, and it is the app that you're probably using, but certainly the young people in your life are using. They're not on Instagram, they're not on Twitter, they're all over TikTok. Have you any concerns about it? Is it something that you would like to see restricted? Personally, it's actually my favourite social media app, if the truth be told, because it tailors the content to you, stuff you're interested in. There's no hate on it, or at least I'm not exposed to any hate. There's no abuse, seemingly, that I'm exposed to in any case. And it just seems you can have a bit of fun with it. But what do you think? Do you have any concerns about TikTok? Would you like to see it banned? Now, it's one state in America, but there is a big push, seemingly, to make it... less popular. Anyway, your views on that too, to 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 0749 125,000. Let's get on to the papers today. It's a bumper day for papers, obviously, with it being Thursday. That being said, again, struggling in the national newspapers to try and pick out something of interest to you. We have a tendency in this country, and I'm sure it's reflective elsewhere, that when there are, you know, one or two big stories, all other news seems to fade off the agenda. And you know, it's just a couple of stories in all of the national papers. So we'll turn to the locals. As two of Donegal's most historic parishes are to be amalgamated with one parish priest serving Kilmacrenan and Termon, this is seen by churchgoers as a backdoor merger for the future of the diocese due to a decline in the faith. And there is a groundswell of belief that this congregation deserves better, much better, last weekend in what's being described as the bombshell moment for the community. A special candidate Keepar Parish Priest Vigil will take place at St. Columba's Church this Friday evening at 9 o'clock. It has attracted much support, and their newly established committee is calling on all to come along, including people from outside of Kilmacrenan, and also all religious denominations are most welcome. It has emerged that those of other faiths are also deeply disappointed, given that they regard Father Don as a personal friend and a confidant. But as I say, and there's plenty of coverage right across the paper, again, the bishop was on this programme earlier in the week, and he said it is a tough decision. He understands that. He understands it's a tough decision for him, for the parish, for Father Don, perhaps. I don't know what Father Don's position is on this, but he says it is a decision that he felt he had to make, and one that he can't sort of... not one that he won't be going back on. And I did ask him directly, and he says in time, time will heal. The Donegal news this morning: one of the county's biggest employers is planning major investment at its Letterkenny facility, with confirmation that the company has purchased a significant parcel of land adjacent to the premises. Zeus Industrial Products Ireland Limited, the global leader in advanced polymer solutions, has confirmed that it has acquired an additional 4.6 acres of land adjacent to its current facility on Letterkenny's Business Park Road. Plans for the new development are still to be finalised, but it's thought it could see the Letterkenny plant double in size. On to the Derry news now. Their headline: Derry told to be quiet. Stormont officials have been accused of attempting to bully Derry into silence in the run-up to today's local government elections. Now, if you're listening in the north, will you be voting in the elections? If so, why? Will you not be voting? If so, why not? Get involved in the conversation here. 00353 749 125,000. Very interested to hear what issues you will be voting on. or not on, for that matter? Is it going to be on the local issues, the council-controlled issues? Is it? Do you have one eye on what influence it might have on the re-establishment of a government in Northern Ireland? Are you disillusioned with politics? Whatever your view might be, 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp number from the North, of course, 00353 86 60 25,000. The Donegal Democrat today, a Donegal man has been jailed after being caught with over €104,000 worth of cocaine. Mark McGonigal was nabbed with almost 1.5 kilograms of the drug. He was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison with the final 2 years suspended. On to the Nationals now. And Integration Minister Roderick O'Gorman has rejected the concerns of government backbench TDs and senators as he insisted asylum seekers would be accommodated at a centre in Inch, County Clare. Local coalition politicians have refused to condemn the protest and backed the views of their constituents. Some politicians have also called for an end to the blockade. Mr O'Gorman said the blockade outside the former Magona House Hotel and reports of protesters boarding buses to count the numbers of asylum seekers were entirely unacceptable. He said, "I accept people and recognise absolutely that people have the right to protest. I think in terms of the blockade, that goes far beyond what I think is acceptable. It's interfering with people's ability to be accommodated," he said. "Often, I know people have preconceptions about international protection applicants. I think when they meet or after accommodation has been established for a while, I think these perceptions fall away." He doesn't seem quite sure about it. If that were the case, and if he truly believed that that opinion, surely then you speak to locals in advance. I'm not saying this is what he should do. I'm just saying from his comments, then you speak to locals in advance and you do the tough work before people arrive, rather than saying once we put people in situ, you get to meet them and everything will be okay. Yet he insists on not giving any forewarning or any consultation in advance, but presumes everything will be okay after the fact. He said reports of protesters boarding a bus leaving the accommodation centre and counting the number of people on board were absolutely unacceptable. Fianna Fáil TD Cathal Crowe said locals had legitimate concerns that had been well expressed at meetings. "I don't agree with the approach at the road at the moment," he said. "I wouldn't call it necessarily a blockade. When I was there, it wasn't a blockade." And that is ongoing. And the people of Inch and Clare say they will stick at it for just as long as it takes. There's also some new figures as it relates to new arrivals into Ireland in the Irish Times today, so not unconnected. The number of people entering Ireland having lost or destroyed their travel documents has fallen significantly amid accommodation shortage for asylum seekers and after tougher enforcement measures were introduced, including which I saw myself, the security stand at the door of the plane effectively to make sure you have documents with you. But the figures here, some 780 people presented at Dublin Airport in the first quarter of this year without passports. That's down 38% on the previous quarter and 50% on the peak figure last year, according to Department of Justice figures provided to the Irish Times. However, the numbers presenting at immigration control, having lost or destroyed their documents, is still significantly higher than in previous years. The fall coincides with an overall decrease in the number seeking asylum. Record numbers applied last year, an average of 1,137 people each month. In the first quarter of this year, the monthly average was 997, down 12%. So those are international protection, about 1,000 a month now. 75,000 odd Ukrainian refugees, and then a further 15 to 20,000 international protection applicants. So those are the figures. Sorry for all the noise. It's just a really, really big newspaper. Okay, the Farmers Journal this morning. Farmers' fears are growing over the possible impact of re-wetting on vast tracts of farmland as discussions on the EU proposed nature restoration law near their final stages. Key EU votes in the coming weeks will clarify Ireland's re-wetting and restoration targets for drained farmed peatlands, which are estimated at over 330,000 hectare. Right. A sip of coffee there. Throat's getting a bit dry. Let's go to the red top tabloids. The Irish Daily Star this morning. Of course, we've covered AIR and its sister company, its mother company, really. Its actual company that owns it, Aircom. Well, they have been fined quite a significant amount of money, €2.5 million. This is for bills rip-off. Aircom has been ordered to refund over 70,000 customers and fined nearly €2.5 million for repeatedly overcharging them over a number of years. As well as the refund order and the financial penalty, the company has also been instructed to change its billing practices. Refunds for the estimated 76,000 affected customers could result in refunds totaling up to €6.7 million on average of just over €88 per customer, according to Watchdog. But I think a lot of people probably get around 10, 15 and then a few much higher. But air in the paper again there. The Sun this morning, the shocked mum of a schoolboy who suffered a litany of facial injuries, including four broken teeth after a horror assault by a gang of kids, is hoping for justice. She last night declared, "To think that anyone has the right to put their hands on someone because of who they are is absolutely disgusting in this day and age." A Garda probe has been launched after the 14-year-old was brutally beaten on his way home from school in an attack that caused national outrage. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar called the ambush horrifying, adding, "I really want to send my solidarity out to the person who was harmed and injured in this way. I would say to them that life does get better." And I do worry to how widely that video was shared. As I say, I'm not a goody two-shoes myself. I try and avoid seeing things like that, but it is all over Twitter and WhatsApp. I think Facebook probably have stronger restrictions in terms of stopping this stuff being circulated. TikTok, which we mentioned earlier, funny enough, their detection technology seems much better. A video like this wouldn't stay up very long, but lots and lots of people sharing it, and I don't know to what end. It is absolutely shocking altogether, and hopefully whomever's responsible is dealt with in a way that would certainly deter any such activity into the future. Are any of you out there excited for Katie Taylor's homecoming? I will say right now, I would, the person who she's fighting, Chantel, is a very, very good boxer, Chantel Cameron, and I think there's going to be a big upset on Saturday night. I hate to say it, but I think anyone who thinks that this is a hand-picked opponent that Katie Taylor's going to roll over is in for a shock. This is a much bigger, younger, and arguably stronger opponent, and stronger than the opponent that she was due to face. So I have my feelings about that. This could not be, this could actually be a fantastic event, but I really do feel that Katie Taylor could be on the wrong end of the result on Saturday night. I don't know what the odds are, but that's what I'd be anticipating. I hope it's not the case, but I do believe that she's going to come unstuck on Saturday night. But anyway, eager Katie Taylor fans got their first chance to see the two-weight world champion in the flesh yesterday ahead of her long-awaited homecoming fight on Saturday. The Bray boxer, along with her opponent Chantel Cameron, took part in a public workout in a specially set-up boxing ring at Pembroke Square at the Dundrum Town Centre on South Dublin. Fans gathered in the sun from as early as midday to watch the undercard fighters be introduced and work out before Katie took to the ring at around 2 p.m. Saturday's bout in the almost sold-out 3 arena will be the first time in her professional career that the Olympic gold medalist will fight in her native country. And there's thousands of people. She had filled Croke Park, and she will in September, regardless of the outcome on Saturday. But the ticket prices for the 3 arena are just off the charts altogether. Crazy stuff. What do you think? How do you think that's going to go? 086 60 25,000. And finally, in the Mirror, the Mail this morning, many of them are phrases and words from the world of business or borrowed from our friends on the other side of the Atlantic. But what they have in common is that they are becoming more than a little annoying. And most disliked of all, apparently, is the expression "going forward." OK, so they've got a top 10 list of expressions which annoy people. So we want you to add to this list, OK, for a bit of fun this morning. So the phrases that we hate, according to this survey, are as follows. Number one, "going forward." So going forward, we're going to have to make some changes. I always get conscious now, are any of these the ones that I use? Because I know I do repeat myself a little bit to the annoyance of some listeners. But anyway, so going forward's number one, "no disrespect, but." Now, when someone says this to me, it means they're just about to disrespect you. Three is "like," you know, as a filler. So like, "I went to the shop like," and "I bought this." Number four, I want to reach out. I wanted to reach out. I don't come across that one too much. Number five, I'm not going to lie. Not going to lie. I think I might be guilty of that one. Number six, basically, the overuse of that word. Number seven, let's go offline. Never heard that one used in conversation. Number eight is so at the start of a sentence. Number nine, the optics of something. Okay, I get that. That can be annoying too. And number 10, my bad. My bad. Which I don't hear as much now as I used to. So what are your... Not the things I say. Don't come at me now saying the things that I say are annoying, okay? But out there, what are the phrases and words that... It's not life or death stuff, is it, of course? But what are the phrases or words that are overused in your view? 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts that number, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Right, can we all agree, or do we all agree, that vaping is a problem, particularly amongst our young people? There's no doubt there's lots of people who are former smokers that switched to an electronic cigarette or some sort of a device like that, and it was the first thing possibly that weaned them off cigarettes and kept them off them successfully. They aren't without risk, but the risk, we're told, are much less than smoking. But there is a huge population out there, and particularly young people, and you'll see them yourself, who never smoked and have started vaping, and they buy these lovely, brightly coloured, nicely flavoured vapes, and they're spending a fortune in some cases. You know, some of these disposable vapes, it can cost 40 or 50 euro to keep them in supply for a week, depending obviously on how heavy you use them. So we've got a whole new group of people coming through who never smoked and I now have a very serious nicotine addiction. Now, nicotine is incredibly difficult to get off. And we've seen what's happened in Australia, haven't we, whereby they are making vapes only available, really, or electronic cigarettes, as a prescribed kind of a device. Do you know what I mean? They're moving forward like that. And the main reason they're doing it is to stop this thing of young people vaping. Now, the reason I'm talking about this is because we're joined on the programme now by Councillor Michael McBride, who is the chair of the Donegal Education and Training Board, and congratulations on that position, Michael. Obviously, we're talking about vaping amongst young people, and most young people are in school. Is it a big problem in the county schools as far as you see it?
Yes, Greg, good morning to you and all the listeners. I sit on the board of Mulroy College, and at our last board meeting, the issue came up and we had a discussion on it. And it seems that in the secondary schools, there is a major problem now with vaping. I think it has become very attractive to young people, and a lot of them are admitting that they have now become addicted to vaping, you know. And so I told them that day that I would raise it at the ETB meeting, which I did earlier this week. And we've decided that we're going to put it on as an agenda item for our next ETB meeting. I've asked that all the school principals would be circulated and get their opinions on it. And if we would sit down and take a look at the feedback we get from it and then move forward, maybe send in some type of letter to the Minister for Health and the Minister for Education to see if there's anything that can be done, particularly to educate young people on the risks of vaping.
That would be a strong message if it comes to it, that presumably it would be a letter on behalf of the Donegal ETB expressing concerns about the availability, I presume, and also the use of vapes amongst young people in the school population.
Yes, Greg, them things will all have to be considered. And I suppose, you know, we need to get more information on it and probably look at putting some legislation in place for dealing with the problem. I think we just can't bury our heads in the sand on this one.
Yeah, and listen, some schools haven't. There are very strict policies in certain schools, if not all. Like, I only can speak for a couple that I know. There are detectors in toilets, or at least the students are told there are detectors in toilets. There are inspections in toilets to make sure young people aren't vaping. And there are stiff penalties for young people found vaping on premises or in school uniforms. So beyond that, really, what could schools really do?
Well, I think it's about educating the people, as I said earlier, educating our youth. We can't really control what happens off campus, you know, through the ETB. But I think, you know, it's just the general health and welfare of our students. We should still be trying to do what we can to help them. And I think, you know, education's the way forward on it.
Well, education, but legislation as well. I mean, it's still not illegal to sell vapes to under 18s. They're still sold in sexy packaging. They're still right at the counter, just as a impulse purchase or a popular purchase, and they still come in bubblegum flavours and flavours that are attractive to young people to get them addicted to nicotine. So there is education, but we're being failed by legislation.
I would have to totally agree with you on that, Greg, yes. Education and legislation, I suppose, is the way forward on it. But you're right, they're so readily available. You can see them sitting on shop counters, they're sitting in pubs, they're sitting everywhere for sale. They are easily accessed. And like you say, the cost of them is another issue as well for students. But look, it's their health and their welfare that we're most concerned about at this time.
Yeah, for sure. Also reading today that obviously vaping is a gateway to smoking, but teen vapers are more than four times likely to binge drink or smoke cannabis, according to a new study. And the difference was even greater for heavy users. There were seven times as likely to have boozed between three and five times in a fortnight, and 20 times as likely to vape and use cannabis together. So it's not just the vaping side of it and the nicotine addiction, but the studies are showing that they are more likely then to begin smoking, which is probably why cigarette companies invest so heavily in vape companies, but also can lead to younger people boozing and smoking cannabis.
Okay, Greg, well, to be honest with you, that's all news to me, but I suppose, you know, it is concerning as well.
Yeah, okay, well, we'll see what comes from it. Thank you very much indeed. That is the chair of the Donegal Education and Training Board, Councillor Michael McBride. Would you as a parent or guardian appreciate some legislative support? Are you worried about a young person in your life vaping? Maybe you can give us an idea of how much it costs. You can contact us anonymously, of course, by WhatsApp or texting 086 60 25000. You can give us a call on 074 91 25000. You know, it's another thing affecting young people. Texter says, vape shops should be regulated and require a licence like an off-licence. Vape should not be sold in Euro shops, petrol stations and shops that fix phones. They aren't strict with ID, but they're not really illegal to be sold to under 18s. The legislation is not really there. And I think someone going into a vape shop is far more likely to be someone who is a former or current smoker. Rather than, it seems to be particularly younger people that will go for the disposable ones. Former smokers tend to get something of a little bit more substance. Right, okay. Just a important email I want to read to you. And it is on the issue of domestic violence, just for those of you listening who might be particularly sensitive to it. But it's an email we've received and I just wanted to read it to you. Following the recent domestic violence allegations from Nicola Gallagher against her former husband, Rory Gallagher, I feel I must speak out regarding the physical and verbal abuse I suffered at the hands of my now ex-husband for 20 years. I'm actually trembling writing this. I find myself doing what other victims are still doing. I hid indoors when my bruises were visible, and if I had to go out, I lied as to how I got the injuries. I deeply regret doing that now. To this day, my family do not know the full extent of the abuse. The abuse started not long after the marriage and long before I turned to drink to help me. It didn't. I had restrictions at the time as to why I felt I could not turn to the guards. I did finally take out a safety and protection order against him, but that in itself was a very dangerous time for me. He was in court when I answered the judge as to why I had applied for the order. I also had to return to the same house as him that day. I did not use the protection order whereby I had an option to phone the guards. One of the last times he physically abused me, he had put me on the floor in the hallway. He kept kicking me. I begged him to stop and said, "You've broken me. You have broke me." It's taken me a long time to try and build up my confidence and self-esteem, but I relive the trauma before every family gathering, grandchildren, etc. I will echo the words of Nicola Gallagher. Report the abuse. Record the abuse. You think by not doing so that you are protecting the children. You are not. You only end up protecting the abuser. Talk, tell, trust in someone is that email coming in from a female victim of domestic violence. Now, we heard earlier in the week, and I'll stress, I think it's really worth listening back to. We heard from three ladies involved in supporting people who are struggling, primarily in terms of providing food for people who can't afford to feed themselves. And one of the things that sticks in my mind was that people in the past who were donators to food banks were now finding themselves in a situation whereby they were having to ring those food banks for assistance. And many, many hundreds, in the high hundreds of families are in Donegal alone, just Donegal alone, are helped consistently in terms of food. Now, the difficulty for a lot of these food banks is sourcing food, because obviously it's getting tight for everyone, so maybe there's less donations, but also their money that they receive, the donations, and there were some generous donations after our piece earlier in the week, but the donations of money to purchase food doesn't go as far because of the price of food. So it's you're caught every which way. So those were two services in different parts of Donegal, and then we spoke to a lady who sort of oversees much of that. So we're going to go to Letterkenny now and sort of try and get a sense of what the situation is in Donegal's biggest urban area. Fintan McGrath is a volunteer, like all of the people that work in this area are volunteers helping people. He's a volunteer with We Care Letterkenny Food Bank. Fintan, thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, now... The guests we had earlier on the week were talking about a significant increase in demand for their services, and that demand coming from different cohorts of people that perhaps weren't seeking assistance in the past. What's the story at We Care Letterkenny Food Bank?
Well, in recent weeks and months, Greg, we've seen a marked increase in the number of people coming to our door. And to the extent that right now, unless we receive some food donations urgently, we're going to struggle in the next few weeks to supply those food items to people who rely on that food when they come to us every 3 weeks. So the food supply on our shelves has been depleted big time, and we just urgently need donations for food and cash, if people can give us cash to buy food. It's a never-ending increase in the number of people and families coming to our door.
Now, last week, I understand 60 families sought help. That's a lot of families. That's not 60 individuals. That's 60 families, and these are families coming from with all different kind of backgrounds and employment situations. Fintan,
that was in just one day, Greg. Not
yeah,
in the week.
I beg your pardon.
Day.
Okay. But you're seeing working families seeking help as well, aren't you?
Well, we don't analyse whether when people come to our door, we ask them we have to get some basic information from the people. We don't know whether they're working, whether they're on benefits, we don't know their personal financial situation. We just know that they've come to us for help, and we never refuse people. So we're a voluntary organisation. We rely 100% on donations. We're not state supported, and unless we get a supply of food from businesses, and that's been difficult in the last several months as well with the businesses, because we have a certain amount of frozen foods, but they're completely depleted, and so we're relying fully now on the non-perishable sector for people to donate food to us, of non-perishable foods, to give it out every week.
And when you talk about the relationship with businesses, are businesses themselves struggling and unable to donate as much as they might have in the past? Is that what you're saying, Fintan?
Well, we believe that maybe the supply chain for some of these businesses has been streamlined, so okay, they don't have as much excess food to give us. That's just a normal fact of life in business. So, They give us whatever they can, and we're able to source that food from various businesses around the town and the region.
Okay,
but,
so as you mentioned,
sometimes we get quite a bit, but other times it's not a lot.
Yeah, as you mentioned, in one day last week, 60 families sought help, a big increase. Again this week, over 40 families seeking help. So, you don't have unlimited resources. So, what are the shelves emptying of? Is it the staples like tinned stuff, rice, that kind of stuff?
The basic food for the pasta, rice, tinned vegetables, tinned fish, tea, sugar, cooking oil, tinned fruit, all the basics that people would normally put in their shopping basket each week.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen the shelves as empty as they are at the moment. So we really, that's why we're putting out this urgent appeal for people if they can to donate food for us.
Right, and it is an urgent appeal because, as you've said yourself, as much as you try to avoid it, you could find yourself in a situation where people are coming for food and you might be struggling to meet their demands. So how can the public help? What's the best way for people listening to this if they wish to call in to the food bank, which is beside Alfie Green's shoe shop in Letterkenny? What is the best way for people to help? Is it to drop off goods? If so, what stuff? Or is it cash donations?
Well, it could be a combination. If people want to give us cash, that would be exception. That would be useful as well. But we're based behind Alfie Green's shoe shop down the laneway on the main square. And we're open every Tuesday and Friday between 11 o'clock and 2:30. If they can't make it to the food bank itself to drop in the food donations, we have drop-off points at the Solo retail outlet and the Simpsons up in the High Road, as well as the Letterkenny Community Centre. So they can drop food as a food drop-off point at each of those three locations. Or else, if alternatively, they can give us a call on 087-147-1325. That's our phone number. Or go on to our website at We Care LK Food Bank, and they can contact us over on our website. So we're available to pick up food. If people can't drop the food into us, we can arrange for one of our volunteers to go and collect it.
Fintan, I know, and it's clear from the way you're speaking, that you're very keen to respect people's privacy, and I get that, but I think it might help if we get as much of an understanding of what we're talking about here as is possible. We're talking about families coming with nothing, but they have young children. They're unable to put food on the table, and they come to the food bank in order to feed their children.
It's a basic food poverty situation. If people haven't got enough money to support themselves, to pay their utility bills, to pay their rent, whatever their financial outlays may be, they need to put food on the table, and we're there to support that. We never refuse a person when they come to the door. So there are situations where we believe that, the whole situation with the food bank is it's not supposed to be a permanent thing. It's supposed to be a temporary basis. But we're finding more and more that people are coming to rely on the food bank because they cannot afford to put food on the table. And we're there to help that situation.
Right. So the premises beside Alfie's Green Shoe Shop is open Tuesdays and Fridays between 11 and 2:30 p.m., I believe you said. So donations or food can be dropped off there. And just remind people again, because as you said yourself, this is a desperate plea here for assistance because the shelves are emptying. Just remind people again where they can drop stuff off or how they can donate outside of those opening hours.
We have three drop-off points. We have got a Solo, the retail outlet, down in the next to the community centre. Also, inside in the community centre, we have a drop-off point. And Simpsons up on the High Road, they've also got a drop-off point for us. But as I said, if the people can't come to us, we can go to them to collect the food. Our phone number again is 087-147-1325. And one of our volunteers will come out and collect the food from you.
Okay. And Fintan, you get no state support. And this is a country at the moment, we're told, awash with money, but there is no direct support to you from social services or the state at all. This is all done through donations, fundraising, and voluntary effort.
we get a bit of food donation from Food Cloud, but basically all the food the vast majority of the food we give out, we collect from businesses, from personal donations. And as I said, this is there. People are trying to work out what a better long-term solution might be for this food poverty situation. Mm. But right now, our immediate concern is we need to get food in.
Understood.
To give people week in, week out. And maybe in the long term, the powers that be, who have probably deep pockets, more resources than we have, they may be able to figure out a more sustainable solution for food poverty in the county in the long term.
Okay, I understand. Thank you very much, Fintan. I hope you have a good response to your appeal today. Fintan McGraw, volunteer with We Care Letterkenny Food Bank. Now, a comprehensive survey of over 1,000 secondary school students by StudyClicks, Ireland's most popular online study tool, has revealed that social media and phone use is causing havoc with their ability to focus on study or concentrate on exam preparations. This is a big sample size, 1,000, much greater than you might see, or at least equal to that you might see for the likes of political parties, popularity type things. So it's pretty representative. Luke Saunders is CEO of StudyClicks. He joins us now. Good morning, Luke.
Morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's good to come on the show. Right, okay. So when was this survey conducted and how?
Yeah, it's pretty recent. It was only last week. So what we did was, StudyClicks has over 200,000 students using it. And we put out the survey, which is something we do every year. The numbers I'm talking about are based on 1,065 students who took it last week. And we asked them a range of questions to do with the impact of social media on their lives, and also more topical things like the cost of living crisis and how they perceive that and the effects it's having on them. Some really interesting results. And I think what's especially interesting for me is to see trends over time, because we ask some of the same questions year after year. And one of the things that that jumps out this year is that the trend of increasing phone use has continued to go upwards. One of the things we ask students to do is to open the screen time app on their phone. So the numbers that they give us back are reflective of reality. And what we found was that more than one in three students are using their phone for 4+ hours per day. And it's probably not news to a lot of people, but that, if you just stop and think about
that. Put a number on it, yeah.
It's pretty high. And then further, 16% are 6 hours plus. So it's, I think the main effect of this on students is, something has to give in the day. There's only 24 hours in a day. And I think often it's sleep. They're not getting enough sleep when they're trying to balance their study, their phone use, time in school, traveling to school, et cetera, et cetera.
But in relation to the screen time, it's quite interesting in that there's an awareness of its impact on them. Do you know
for
what
sure.
I mean? So,
yeah,
which
absolutely.
I think it's interesting. It's not like casual, and you're trying to pick out the issue here. They're aware that they're probably spending too much time on their phones, and then probably looking to us to say, "Well, help us here."
For sure, yeah, and that was borne out in the results. 4 in 5 students, 83%, said that they worry about their phone use, that they use it too much. So I think, you got to remember all these apps that they're using, like Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, YouTube, they're all designed to keep you on the app. It's no surprise that students are staying there. It's kind of like you go into a rabbit hole of looking at one video, flicking to the next one. I think parents out there, what can you actually do to help your child? I think the first thing, and I often go out to students when I'm talking about StudyClicks and give them advice. And I think when you're talking to 17, 18-year-olds, as a parent, you can't, take a hardline approach where you're saying maximum of 2 hours per day or whatever. I think the best way to do it is to actually help them help themselves. And the way I suggest to do that is get your child to take out their phone, look at the screen time app, see how much they are using it, and just be aware of that. That's the first thing, to acknowledge that, look, it probably is a little bit high. And then I would always recommend to students, particularly if they're trying to study, there's lots of distraction blocker apps out there. The one that I always suggest to students is called Forest App. And what this does is, if a student is studying in little 25-minute segments, you turn on Forest App, you set the timer for 25 minutes, and if you don't use the phone for those 25 minutes, it plants a little tree on the app, and then if you do get distracted during it, one of your trees dies. And it kind of gamifies the habit of you know, healthy use of your phone and, and give you time to study.
And at the very least, it focuses your mind and the conversation on how much screen time, you know, so you can see that the multi faceted benefits of that. And the great thing about this survey too is we can drill down on a county by county basis, and you've been good enough to pick out the Donegal stats for us. You asked the question, how much has social media with short form videos impacted your concentration or ability to study? 68% is the Donegal average, which is higher than the average of 54%.
Yes, yeah, and we saw some variability in this one. Because the thing is, like, when we look at what are the most popular apps, joint first place, Instagram and Snapchat, and then TikTok close behind. And as I said already, these apps are built so that they're going to keep you on the app. They don't try and get you off the app, obviously. And that has its effect on students' ability to concentrate or study. Like, you know, because often what I find when I talk to students is that they might be sitting down to study Macbeth or whatever it is, or do their maths questions. They have a constant stream of inbound messages coming in on Snapchat or WhatsApp or you know, so they're constantly being pulled away from what they're trying to concentrate.
And there's the fear of missing out as well. And the apps are designed to make you feel like the next time you're opening it, you need to see what the first video is or the first reel is.
For sure. And I think students, one practical thing that I always advise them to do is change the notifications on their phone. So, for example, if you're in a WhatsApp group, for example, set it so that it's not pinging you every time someone contributes to that group. There's little simple practical tips like that. And there's a lot of advice like this on the StudyClicks blog, and it's free. If parents want to have a look at it, just go into the blog and then look up the study advice section. But yeah, it has a very, very real effect on their ability to concentrate. Yeah. And one of the aspects that I thought was quite interesting when you drill into the Donegal statistics is we looked at a lot of cost of living type questions, and it seems to me from the stats that there's the effect of the cost of living crisis has a greater impact in Donegal versus the national average. Mm-hmm. And simple things like we asked the question about, do you think the cost of living crisis will influence where you decide to go to college? And Donegal students, 55% said yes, it will. And I suppose it's no surprise that a county that's further away, but than Dublin or Cork or whatever, but it's having a real impact.
Well, for
there.
Sure, and it's kind of interesting too, because it does tally with the fact that we in Donegal have the lowest income levels and the lowest disposable income levels. So, and also a couple of questions here, and I'll tie them in with one question to you. Have you ever given up sports pastimes to focus more on school? 73% in Donegal, yes. The national average, 65. How concerned are you about the cost of living? Very concerned, 73% in Donegal, 64% nationally. I'm not sure if it's always been the case, but there's a strong awareness of what's going on amongst the young people. You know, they're not insulated anymore. Maybe they weren't in the past, I don't know. But these figures probably tally with what you might hear from the fully grown adult population. Do you think the government are doing enough to address the rise in cost of living? 91% think the government are not doing enough. So, as I say, you know, there's a great awareness amongst young people about the state of the country. I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad thing at this point, Luke.
Yeah, like I think the internet has made students and young people, like when I was in school, I wasn't kind of buying the Irish Times or the Irish Independent every morning on the way to school. But when you have, you know, all your apps on your phone, you've got, there's news coming in via, like, if you're on TikTok last week, it was all about King Charles's coronation. Like, students are not insulated from news in the way that probably we were.
They're getting it from a different place, really, I think.
They're getting it from a different place. So, yeah, so it doesn't surprise me that they're very strong opinions. I think the one change since social media has become the main source of news is that the viewpoints and the opinions are really, really polarized, right? So they'll have very extreme opinions like, you know, the government definitely aren't doing a good enough job, or, you know, the cost of living crisis is out of control. It tends to be more probably polarized. And probably the reality falls somewhere in the middle of both sides.
Yeah.
You know?
So back to screen time. I think I'm not sure it's effective to say, right, phone down, let's do this. I think it's about having a conversation, using details like this and say, look, at your peers realise the struggle too. What, you know, you want to do well in your leaving. You want to maybe pursue whatever your passion is. We're going to have to talk about, you know, your screen time interfering with your concentration. I think that's the way forward, isn't it? I don't think ruling with an iron fist necessarily. It might work for some, but I think it's obvious that there's a great awareness amongst young people, and maybe our best approach is to produce statistics like this and say, look, it's the same for everyone. What should we do, do you think, to give you the best chance of achieving what you want to achieve in your studies?
For sure. And I think schools can play a role in this. Like, I've noticed in a lot more in recent times, schools are having stricter policies around phone use at lunchtimes, that there's no phones, that sometimes the phones are left in the lockers, et cetera, et cetera. I think schools can help. You know, and there's a lot of good to be had. Like, there's a lot of students, for example, who their teacher would create them a quiz on StudyClicks on specific topics, and then the teacher would share it, and the students would actually take the quiz in groups on their phone. So don't get me wrong, the phones have a place in study, and there's a lot of good stuff on it. And no, that was really borne out. And one of the stats in this survey that really surprised me was the rise of ChatGPT. I was aware that it was a factor in third level where students were using ChatGPT to do assignments and so on. But we asked the question, have you used it in the course of your schoolwork? And 1 in 5 students said they had. And I thought that was really interesting, because I think that's something that schools certainly won't be. I haven't heard of any awareness around that.
There has been no
yet.
Talk about it. And I actually tweeted the Department of Education, Education Minister, on this at the end of last year, wondering, were they aware that this was going on? And still, there's not been really a great conversation on it. I think that 1 in 5 is probably going to be 3 and 4 and 5 next year. And I'll be keeping an eye on that stat myself. If people want more information on the survey and the StudyClicks, the website, simple enough, I'm sure, Luke.
Yeah, studyclicks.ie. That's StudyClicks with an X at the end. And yeah, you can set up a free account and try it out to study. It's probably a little bit late in the day for this year's Leaving Cert, but you can set up a free account now and try it out. And even for parents out there, I'd encourage them to click on the blog, which is in the corner. There's a lot of free advice for parents about all this kind of thing that I'm talking about.
All right. And did you say over 200 students using the service at the moment? Is that 200,000 students?
200,000, yeah.
Wow, okay. Yeah. That's impressive, yeah. Right? Well done, Luke. Thanks very much indeed. Luke Saunders, CEO there of StudyClicks. Anything you wish to say on that last conversation? 08660 25,000 WhatsApps and texts to that number. We'll be back with you here on the 9 till noon show after the news and obituary notices. Stay right where you are.